Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from HealthNetics. Do you have nagging aches and pains from your younger, more athletic days? HealthNetics CBD is a premium brand CBD that may help take care of aches and pains, as well as relieve anxiety and sleeplessness. HealthNetics products are all natural, THC-free, made in the USA, and undergo third-party lab testing to ensure quality and purity. All CBD is not the same. Order today with a money-back guarantee at HealthNetics.com and use promo code SPORTS for 20% off.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Put you off.
Well, we're live, and people are... that's how we're going to start. Pete's Carroll saying, you can apologize, and blah, blah, blah. Well, we're 3 minutes late, and Pete's... because we were talking about comic books for a while, because Pete's Carroll got his first comic books ever for the holidays. He's reading Akira, or as you Westerners call it, Akira.
I don't know how to read, and I was just asking Jose, how do I do that?
So you can see my massive shelf of comic books behind me. Welcome to the club, Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but don't apologize to those people. Should be so lucky to have us talking to you on New Year's Day.
Right.
So what if we're 3 minutes late? You're lucky we're even here.
Happy New Year's, by the way.
Happy New Year to you.
Merry Christmas.
Even more beautiful in 2020.
Oh, you. So how are your holidays, by the way? We didn't have an A-side last week. What'd you get up to on Christmas?
Oh, he recorded Eurobash.
That's true.
I had a great Christmas. My little niece is 3, so it was very exciting with Santa Claus and everything like that.
She's at the age where Christmas is like a really big deal early in the morning. Yeah,
it was great.
Awesome.
You know what I mean? It brings a little bit of magic back to it. And I was on the 23rd of December. I was like, I fucking hate Christmas. And then on the 25th, I was like, it's the best, most magical time of the year.
What'd you get up to New Year's?
My friend David moved into a house with his soon-to-be wife, fiance Emma. So we went out there to see the house for the first time, and we had a few drinky poos out there. It's great crack, actually. Had a great night.
Pete C. Carroll had a few drinks on a holiday? No.
Look, special. It was a special occasion. No. But I prefer to. You would be the same as me. Like, you'd prefer to be at a house party than like a club scene or anything 100%. Like that.
I can't do clubs. I've walked into like New Year's Eve, like here in Phoenix, they have a lot of like bars and stuff that do things. I remember I've walked in and I'm like, nope, and I just immediately turn around. It's like that gif of like the Simpsons grandfather where he like walks in and then does a lap and then just like leaves immediately. That's been me many a time.
The smell of cheap aftershave and desperation just always turns me off. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. People grinding on you.
I don't have that problem. I don't know what they do out there in Ireland, just walking around stabbing people and grinding on people all day.
Look, you'll take the grind over the stab any day.
I'll take your word for it. I will take your word for it. But as always, we could talk about pizza getting stabbed all we want. For hours on end, but we won't do that this time. We're going to talk about mixed martial arts because we haven't done it in a long time. No fights, really, in the UFC since the last time we talked, but that doesn't mean there haven't been fights in general. There's a big Bellator Japan card, or 237, whatever you want to call it. We have the Ryzen card that you watched. That was great fun. Casey and Esther were there on the site out in Tokyo. You should stay on this. After this, go watch all their videos. They also have a coffee. They have a coffee talk that's coming out, which I'm very excited to watch.
Do they?
Yes, they do. So,
who did they get for the coffee talk?
I think it's just them. I haven't watched it yet. I have not quite watched it yet. So I'm saving it for when we're done with this. I'm going to put it on my YouTube on my big television. And I'll sit down and watch my fellow quote unquote hipsters do a coffee talk.
Oh, hey, we're all the slagans are just so bad. I wish they'd just get better at that shit. But they are the best at that. I think it's the best thing for Casey and Esther because it's just like a hang with them, isn't it? I think it's great.
I love it. And if you haven't seen it, there's a long thread on Twitter and they're all on Instagram of Esther's photos from the Ryzen card. She did like not even just Ryzen, the Bellator card too. And I think UFC 243, the Israel Adesanya card, she was like, that is some of her finest work she's ever done. Same thing for 244, 245, especially that Kevin Lee Gregor Gillespie fight where she just got all the perfect shots. But she was on another level on Ryzen. Like, people getting choked out, people getting head kicked. I have that tension photo of the him kicking the mouthpiece out is one of the coolest photos I've ever seen. She also put together her photos of the decade that she put out on Twitter and Instagram, which is unbelievable. I had the joy of posting them and just sifting through. I go, I don't even know how you can just pick.
Isn't it? View. That's what I thought so funny. It's like, you know, they're picking the photos of the decade, and under nearly everyone, there's like 10 replies with 10 different pictures that could have been in the thread that were definitely there. I mean, which was the one I saw today, the John Jones walk away guillotine on Machida, where he just flopped lifeless to the ground.
Yeah,
I remember actually watching that live and just being like, holy fuck. Like, when he did that, he's like, what the fuck
is that was the on, that was I was in college when that happened. I convinced my professor to let me cover that event.
Nice.
For school. That was the first time I got to cover a UFC event. But yeah, go check out Esther's stuff. Casey did awesome work as usual with the scrums. I was very fascinated watching because last Ryzen card, I did not work with you. I was with MMA Fighting, but I didn't work it. This is the first Ryzen card, New Year's Eve card I really worked where Casey was on the site. So it was very fascinating to watch the media day process from. I know how like Bellator works. I know how Cage Warriors works. I know how the UFC works. It was fascinating watching another promotion that isn't a native English speaking do media. So it was just it was an interesting time to watch, and I always like watch Ryzen because it reminds me of Pride. So yeah, I had a good time.
I was actually thinking of you as I'm watching this event because I know you're putting together the events piece. Yeah. And I was like,
I had already finished writing it and submitted it by the time that was over. Okay. And I kicked myself. Like, that was harder than I thought event of the year. Because I was putting it together because Alex Cayley, who was the czar of the end of the year awards, assigned me the event of the year because he says I can rattle off events by memory. And it was very difficult because it was like I put my top five together and it was like all UFC. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. Like, there's been better. There's been really good non-UFC fights, like the Cage Warriors one. The first Bellator card with Fedor and Bader was really good. The KSW was really good. There has been the one championship. It was a lot harder.
Oh shit! There was one century this year as well. Fucking hell! It's been
a
lot of events.
So I was like, top five was hard. Like, putting it together, man. I had to like trust my. I'm like, then at the end I was like, whatever. I'm just gonna trust my gut. Like,
that's what I did with the Fights of the Decade one as well. I was just like, I know people are going
to
be upset.
I have
don't
a
care.
Bone to pick with you on Fights of the Decade too, Pizza Carroll.
What did I do?
You did not include my favorite fight of all time.
Korean Zombie and Poirier.
Yep. That is my single favorite fight of all time. And as soon as I saw your list, I was like, I bet he didn't include it. And sure enough.
Like, I mean, there's a lot of – when you're doing these things, right, there's all these – like, people don't realize there's 20 events – from the decade that that people will say have to be on the list. Yeah. You have to rattle it down to 10 or fights, whatever it is. And it's like, even with you, I'd say you thought of at least a short list of like 15 events. And then you're like, now I have to get this down to 5.
Yeah.
And by the time you do that, I mean, you can't even think straight. Like, it's just like, all right, this is what I'm going to have to go with. Otherwise, I'm going to be here till next year trying to put together this fucking list. You know what I mean?
I don't think we did Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. That would have been hard too. That would have been real hard. Last year was really easy because we had the emergence of Israel Adesanya. But I was looking at my list of fighters of the year, breakthrough fighters of the year, and I had Izzy, Alexander Volkanovski, and Wiley Zhang on my 2018 breakthroughs.
It's a piece of piss this year. It's Piotr Jan.
Or Jairzinho.
No, it's Piotr Jan. I think you'll find it's Piotr Jan the more you look at it.
So, yeah. I mean, how many times did was he 3-0 in 2019? Well, we're gonna say we'll save this because we're gonna do like our picks of the year at like our end of the year thing at the end, because we'll save our lists for then. But as always, this is not our podcast. This is your guys' podcast. You can ask us whatever you want. It is Peachy's podcast. We're just watching it. So you can leave your question on the site. You can use hashtag the A-Side on Twitter. I don't look at the questions until I'm on the air, so you can ask whatever you want. I also have the YouTube chat open for all of you lovely people to make fun of us and ask us questions, whether who would win in a fight between me and Peachy, because we know the answer would be me. But we're going to keep moving on. First question on the site from longtime commenter Trumbo. We're kicking off the 2020s.
Well done, Trumbo.
With one of the longest commenters we've had. So true or false? And one question. So true or false, Peachy? Oh, first of all, happy New York. True or false for 2020? For 2020, Max Holloway wins back the featherweight championship of the world.
False.
I'm going to say false too, simply because
there's a lot going on there now, isn't there? Volkanovski, Zabit, Yair Rodriguez. There's lots of matchups. Exactly. Like, I mean, look, there's so many fights that could be made that aren't Max Holloway there. And I think he deserves a shot. Of course he does at the belt straight away. He's brilliant. I think he's fantastic. But there's just a lot that can happen there. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Max take a long bit of time off, allowing someone else to fight for the title. And then who knows? I don't know.
Well, I was looking, like, did you listen to the Joe Rogan podcast with Max Holloway on it?
Yeah.
He said that this is a weird fight when he lost to Volkanovski, because he said of his last few fights, he took the least amount of damage against Volkanovski, and he still lost. So everyone, like, I was thinking to myself, like, in my mind, I was like, I wouldn't put it past Max to take a lot of time off, but have we heard Max say that? Because I feel like everyone else is saying it, but I haven't heard Max say he wants to take a lot of time off. I feel like we're just kind of putting that on him.
Yeah, like, I guess when you just look at his activity, like, he's just always going, and you're like, maybe this is a nice time where you don't feel like you need to keep defending the belt. You can take that time off to decide what you want to do next. Because, like, he's a living legend in our sport. Like, he can kind of think about what he wants to do next. And I always remember, you know, this 55 talk isn't going to go away, even though he's no longer the champion. And I always think of, you know, the people like yourself who know a lot about this sport always say, maybe if he wants to go to 55, he needs to take that elongated period off to you know, put some good weight on his body and stuff. Like, I mean, there's a lot of options there. And, you know, you certainly wouldn't blame the guy for taking a break at this stage, you know?
Yeah, so I think what he has, like, what could benefit him too is Volkanovski had surgery on his hand. He, like, broke his hand in the fight. So Volkanovski could be out for a while too. So if Max wants to wait for him to return, that could be hugely beneficial for him in the long run. I was on the team that if Max wanted to take a lot of time off, he would get an immediate title fight regardless of who was the champion. Like, kind of like how Ronda Rousey did. Like, when she lost to Holly, the belt changed hands twice during her time off. Like, Misha beat Holly, and then Amanda Nunes beat Misha, and then when Ronda came back, she fought Amanda because she had the belt. So I was on this team where if Max wants to take 12 months off, whoever has the belt when he comes back, he gets to fight. It could be Volkanovski, it could be Zabit, it could be Korean Zombie. Max gets to cut the line of contenders. Mm-hmm. So if he wants to do that, great. But if Volkanovski is out for a while, and Dana White did say he wants to go to Australia every year now, like that part of the world, if Izzy is still champion and Volkanovski is still champion, I don't know why you don't do, say, Israel Adesanya beats Yoel Romero in March, like the rumored fight is going to be, and they want to, and then they want to get and turn him around and fight Paulo Costa. Israel Adesanya, Paulo Costa, and Volkanovski, Max Holloway, as main and co-main down in that part of the world, that is a phenomenal card right there. And especially if Dan Hooker wins in Adelaide. Is it in Adelaide, right?
That's correct, yeah. Auckland, is it?
Or Auckland. I can't quite remember. Yeah. I always get those two confused.
Auckland's New Zealand. It's in New Zealand. Yes, so correct, Auckland. Correct.
So, and Dan Hooker beats Paul Felder. Throw him on that card too. Maybe against a Poirier type of guy. Like, that's a phenomenal card for that part of the world.
You have so many of those city kickboxing guys, like, that are coming through as well. I expect that gym to keep having guys signed as well. But here's a funny thing I was just thinking about as you were talking there. You know, I know he's not coveted this fight, and it's not something he's ever made a priority of, but he's probably in a better position in the Conor McGregor sweepstakes off a loss and losing the 45 title than he was with it. Because now he doesn't have to be like, this is champ shit, I have to defend against the number one contender and stuff like that. You know, Conor obviously doesn't want to fight at 45. It doesn't seem like he does, but at 55, he might look at what Poirier did to Holloway there, and if everything doesn't go according to his plan with his three-tier plan from Cerrone to Masvidal and then to Nurmagomedov, I feel like Max is right there, and it's a fight that every time it's popped up on social media or anything, people are really, really interested in it.
You're not wrong. Like, I hadn't thought about that. I just know Conor has his plan. I think if Conor... I'm still adamant that if Conor loses to Cowboy Cerrone in a few weeks, that he should get the trilogy with Nate. And if he loses that, we might never see Conor again. But yeah, Max is... He could rematch Max. He could rematch Dustin. He could fight Justin Gaethje. Like, there's a lot of... Like, when we were trying to make this whole what's going to happen to the welterweight, lightweight division situation, a lot has to happen when Conor and Cowboy fight. Like, that... Mm. That one fight is like the linchpin to a lot of matchups. Because like Conor wins, then you have the Masvidal fight. Conor loses, then Masvidal could fight Usman, and then Conor could fight Nate. If Cowboy if Cowboy wins dominantly, maybe they give him a shot at like move him up the 170-pound rankings. Like a lot has to happen that card before we can even make possible matchups.
Mm, and I feel like we were talking about this fight. No, every week probably since it's been announced or whatever. And I can remember when we were initially talking about it, I had talked to Owen Ruddy. And, I mean, that's probably one of two interviews anyone has done from the camp. Like, it's been radio silence again. And that just worries me. Because the McGregor, who was on top of his game, everybody from the camp couldn't wait to do interviews to talk about how great he looked, how amazing he was, all this stuff. And it was the same before Khabib. There was this radio silence. And when that happens, I'm always like, well, why aren't people talking here? This should be exciting. Like, this is the return of one of the most polarizing stars of the sport, and nobody from the camp is putting themselves in front of a camera to speak about it. It's just, well, apart from Owen Roddy, of course, who I have a lot of time for doing that for me. But I just feel like it was always something that was pretty... It goes hand in hand with a Conor camp. All of these guys talking. All of these guys talking about how great he looks. Now, Kavanaugh's not even doing interviews. You know what I mean? It's just... It's a bit... I don't know, it's off-putting for me, having covered his career since he was 20 or whatever, you know what I mean?
Well, speak of the devil, 34 minutes ago, John Kavanaugh just tweeted, January 1st, he tweeted this just 34 minutes ago. January 1st, last heavy spar today before we go to Vegas. Can honestly say this is the best I've seen him and wasn't sure that was possible to do 6 months ago. You guys are in for a real treat. I'm glad to have a good seat. Hashtag UFC 246. So, 34 minutes ago, John Kavanaugh tweeted that this is the best he's seen Conor in a long time.
Yeah, but I don't, unless I'm going to talk to you and I can actually feel what you're saying, I don't believe that. Like, I mean, you know, he probably said something similar before he fought Khabib, and I don't care what anyone says. It's the worst version of Conor we saw. Like, so, I mean, that's when you kind of start going, well, all right, you said it. Does that mean it's true? Sure. I don't know.
Sure. Well, we're going to move, keeping in the Conor McGregor, what do you call it? Theme.
Vain.
It's not doesn't have to be about Conor McGregor, but one of his former opponents. True or false, Jose Aldo wins the bantamweight title.
I tell you what, he looked fucking good.
He did. I actually had him winning.
I think Jan and guys like that are going to be trouble for him, though.
Jan or Aljamain, who's long and lanky and has really good submission game.
But I feel like he never uses those leg kicks as much as we used to see him in the WEC days. Remember, he fought Faber and he like disabled the guy, like he would just destroy his legs. And I guess the early in the Moraes fight, it seemed like he was gonna go with something like that. I think that would be the way to fight Jan if you're trying to, you know, because he's so predominantly a boxer. I think, you know, that's the real way Aldo could have success against him. But I guess. I think that's a tough fight for him. I think someone like Aljamain Sterling could cause him a lot of problems in terms of wrestling and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it would be an amazing story, but I'm going to go with false.
Yeah, I'll say false too. I think, we have to even see when Henry Cejudo, like if Henry Cejudo only fights once this year, then who's he, like, and he fights Aldo. I don't know I think Aldo could beat Cejudo for sure. But if Cejudo wants Aldo in his next fight, like, I slightly favor Aldo against Henry Cejudo. But who knows? It really depends on, like, if Cejudo faces Peter Yan and Yan wins, I don't think anyone's going to take the belt from Yan anytime soon if he wins. I think, again, it depends on who Cejudo fights next. But I'm going to say false. True or false, John Jones fights for the heavyweight championship?
False.
I'm going to say true. He's already talking about it at the
press conference. He's been talking about it for years. Every time he does this shit where he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do it. And you're like, oh, this is going to be great. And then he doesn't fucking do it. So, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to get myself excited anymore. I'm already getting excited.
I'm going to say true, because at that last press conference when it was him and Dominic up on stage, he said that he was actually trying to fight Stipe in October or September. But they already had other plans for him. So I'm going to say true. The only thing I think... What's up?
Far more lucrative at this stage.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
The only thing I think would stop that is Stipe is currently sidelined, recovering from his last fight against DC. And DC said that in another interview... that he's waiting for Stipe, and he's like, if Stipe and DC don't fight till August, December, and then there's another like fight of the year candidate, and they get banged up again. So the only thing that I think would prevent John Jones from fighting for the heavyweight championship of the world is if the heavyweight champion is on the sideline. But I do expect him to fight at heavyweight. It just depends on who he fights. That's my take.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, as much as we've been singing the praise of the likes of Blachowicz and Corey Anderson, who, you know, we love that guy. He's an amazing, and we love his kind of rubbing the UFC up the wrong way. Everything about what he's doing at the moment is really good for media members and fans, I'd say. Maybe not so much the brass, but, you know, as much as he's doing great work, it still doesn't compare to Jones going up to heavyweight. Like, it's just going to be a completely different thing. So, such a big fight, I feel, no matter who he takes on there. I don't even feel like, you know, whoever's the champion, I feel like it's John Jones moving up to heavyweight is the story rather than anyone he's taking on, you know?
I agree. I'm curious. But then John is so meticulous with his every decision he makes. Is like laid out and like strategized. So if he goes to heavyweight, he said, I can't imagine he's not going to want to take a lot of time to bulk up. Like, no. I don't think he's like when Bader went up to heavyweight for that Grand Prix, there were a lot of light heavyweights that just kind of moved up, like the Rampage and Chael Sonnen, like the Rampages and the Chael Sonnens. And there were a lot of guys like that. And Bader just kind of, he was a light heavyweight that just stopped cutting weight. Cause like Fedor is not the biggest heavyweight in the world.
He looked like more of a natural heavyweight than Fedor did when they fought.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And then the only real legitimate heavyweight he fought was Matt Mitrione, who he just dominated. He just ragdolled him for like 15 minutes. So Bader, he said that at the end of the run, he felt like a legitimate heavyweight. But when he first started, his body just was a light heavyweight that stopped cutting weight. Same thing as Darian Caldwell in this featherweight tournament. He goes, I'm just a bantamweight. That's not cutting weight right now. Like, I'm still a bantamweight. I haven't bulked up yet. So I feel like John Jones is not going to take that approach, and he's going to take time to become a real heavyweight before he moves up.
Well, look, I mean, people don't give people a lot of credit. Like, I mean, I feel like Max Holloway did that against Poirier. Joanna did that against Valentina Shevchenko. And because they lost, people are like, oh, this guy sucks and shit. You're like, you know, not that everyone says that, but you do see it. And you're like, do you realize the risk that this person just took in this fight? Like, I mean, you meant to know stuff about the sport if you're going to follow it so passionately, you know what I mean?
Even look at Jacare, Rockhold, and Weidman. Like, they all...
Oh, yeah.
They're going up from middleweight to light heavyweight. That was rough for them, too. Didn't work out for them. And before that, we were singing the praises of the Thiago Santos, the Anthony Smiths that moved up and looked great. Doesn't work out for everyone. They also got rough matchups right out of the gate where I think Anthony Smith took the slow climb because he wasn't, like, a world beater. He didn't have high expectations. Same thing for Thiago Santos. He kind of filled in on short notice. Who did he fight in his... Was it Eric Anders? Was his first fight at light heavyweight when he filled in?
Was it Manoa?
No, it was...
It might have been Anders in Brazil, was it?
He was supposed to fight Manoa, but then Manoa got hurt, and then he fought... So that was his two middleweights fighting at light heavyweight. And then the next fight was Manoa. And then the next fight was Jan. So like Thiago Santos didn't fight Dominic Reyes in his first fight. He didn't fight Jan in his first fight. He didn't fight he did the slow climb up too. That all those fights were absolutely insane. He had no expectations of light heavyweight. It just turned out he was phenomenal. And now a lot of people think he beat John Jones. I keep seeing 125 a lot on Twitter for the rounds that they think he won.
One sentence I wrote in that Fights of the Decade piece against with the Jones and Gustafsson fight, I'm like, and no one has pushed him as hard to this day. And straight away, as soon as it like went out, I was like, that's the only line I looked at. I was like, fuck. Because Thiago Santos might have beaten him. You know what I mean? It's like, but I'm arguing Gustafsson might have beaten him as well, but it's the recency bias. People are like, fuck you, Petey.
They would say that anyway. True or false, Rose is the 125-pound champion at the end of 2020.
No.
Absolutely not. I don't think Valentina's losing the belt for a long time. This guy, maybe Trumbo meant 115.
He's still on Trumbo. Fair play. He's given us a lot of juice here, in fairness.
And these are all good questions. Yeah. Rose is maybe he meant 115. Do you think Rose would be the 115-pound champion? Actually, save that because we have a question coming up later. True or false, Bellator does another tournament. Bantamweight, featherweight, or lightweight? Well, they're already doing a featherweight tournament right now.
They have to. It's not like they might. They need to do this stuff because they are so bad at building narratives that last like more than one event.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, that's why these things really go well. The European series, like, I mean, we have no idea of where people are on the totem pole because it's just like, here's a bunch of fights again. Woo! You know, there's like, you need to give us something here. I was even arguing for get European titles over here. And if you become the European title, then you, the European champion, you fight, within 6 months, you can get to fight the international champion. I feel like that's their big issue here. They've had some great, great sold out cards in Dublin, but I feel as though if they don't actually develop a storyline, if they don't have those, reasons for people to be coming back to these things rather than just going to a fight card, I feel like it's going to be hard to maintain those sold out shows, even though they have like superstars like James Gallagher over here who commands such big attention all over the world. I just feel like they need to work on what are we actually selling here? What is the product?
I don't, like, James Gallagher has the makings, could be a massive star. Like, he could be a huge star in America. He's obviously a huge deal in Europe, especially when he headlines the Dublin cards. Lost in Sioux Falls, but he also has a win in Madison Square Garden. But, like Michael Venom Page, I want to see him fight, like, these upper echelon in America. Yeah. So, like, we can see him fight. Like, I would love to cover a James Gallagher fight. But I want, like Michael Venom Page... I was around him a lot in Chicago, and I think being around him a lot in Chicago and the fans seeing him around a lot was hugely beneficial for Bellator. And yes, he lost, but he lost to Douglas Lima very violently. But the way he handled himself too, because a lot of people saw that, I think got him a lot of fans. Yes, there were a lot of haters, but a lot of fans were like very shocked at how positive he was on the outcome. Like, yeah, I lost. I hope he becomes champion now.
People don't realize that James and the likes of James and Michael have been competing in martial arts since they're like 10 years old. They have lost so many times, you wouldn't believe. Probably in horrendously embarrassing ways. It just wasn't people there to see it. So, I mean, it's like the thing with James is, you know, I completely agree with that, that the they need to move him onto that US opposition again. But they need to do that by doing something with his fights here. Like, I mean, why isn't he fighting for the European bantamweight title against Kyle Ellenor, who beat a Cage Warriors champion in his debut? Like, when you're a Cage Warriors champion, you are waiting to be signed by the UFC. Can you defend that title enough to the point where they go and sign you? That's all that is. It's like you're next in line. So if he's done that to a former Cage Warriors champion and now he's fighting James, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's lots of great bantamweights there that I'm sure would be like, oh, I want to fight for that title, and I get that, but you got to let James, if he's the one selling out cards, the headline of these Irish cards that are selling out 10,000 seats, that's the guy you need fighting for the title.
Well,
and look, sorry, go ahead.
There's no bantamweight champion period in Bellator right now. Horiguchi vacated because of his injury.
Yeah, but there'd be murder if they put that for the undisputed title, Kyle Ellenor.
No, I'm not talking about that, but if Gallagher wins, he's a big star. Why wouldn't he fight for the championship of the world? Like, not even European. Like, if he fights for the Bellator championship on another Madison Square Garden card they want to put, like, you know, Gallagher's going to be a big star. He comes in here, people see him fighting for a major championship in Madison Square Garden on a major card. Maybe put, like...
That's huge with the Irish, too, you know? The East Coast of America, it's
stack
crazy.
Stack it. Stack that whole card like what they used to do. Okay, perfect example. Last Madison Square Garden card. Aaron Pico, Adam Borch. Adam Borch was known to relative like hardcore fans. He gets on the MSG card with all Sonnen Machida, Rory McDonald, Dylan Danis. They see him knock out Aaron Pico. All of a sudden, he's not only a big star, he's doing all the interviews. He's in the featherweight Grand Prix. He was on the MMA Hour after he did it.
Sorry, mate. Hey, he was on Eurobash before and after.
He was on Eurobash before and after. So. Stick Gallagher on MSG card for the Bantamweight Championship of the World. Why not? If he loses, he's still a former title contender, and he can, not like that's it for him.
It's so funny, yeah, because every time, like, when he lost to Bandeas, people were like, oh, it's over now. You're like, no, it's not. It's,
like, Connor lost to Nate, and he's still the biggest star in the UFC. Like, let him fight in America against, like, a big-name opponent. Like, have MVP fight Douglas Lima on the card. Like, yeah. Who's a Brazilian prospect? I can't think of a Brazilian prospect at Bantamweight off the top of my head. Make him fight Gallagher. Do Brazil versus the UK. Like, Brazil versus Europe, champion versus a contender. Do that. There's a narrative right there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if they do a bantamweight tournament.
That's what we thought it was going to be. That's what we thought the European series was going to be. And it was sometimes. Like, they had Patricky Pitbull versus Ryan Scope. They had Tim Elliott versus Brent Primus. They're doing Queely v. Primus on this. But we thought we'd see a lot more of that. I thought all the main card would be pretty much like our elite guys who they have signed, in fairness to them, against like a good level, like guys who are at least on the radar in their divisions in the US, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I feel like, you know, look, it's still doing a great job. I don't think you can argue with it that they've sold out every Irish show that they've done, but it is very much Ireland is the jewel in the crown of that European series. They are not getting those numbers in London. They aren't getting those numbers in Birmingham. Only in Ireland are they selling out shows.
Well, if they're going to do, I'd like to see, if they do a bantamweight Grand Prix, Gallagher's obviously has to be in it. So, like, that could just be how you build him to the championship anyway. I think a lightweight Grand Prix would be very beneficial solely because Patricio Pitbull, who's the featherweight champion, is in this featherweight Grand Prix. So maybe they just have a number one contenders tournament, not just a, like, you know how Rory McDonald and Patricio Pitbull are in the Grand Prix as champion? Let the lightweights fight it out. The winner gets the $1 million prize and everything, and then fights for the championship. That's the other.
As long
part
as it's not
prize.
Brother, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, at the
it would even cooler if it was his brother.
At the when he beat Michael Chandler, I was there, and at the press conference, they made a joke like, "Would you ever fight your brother?" And he said, "Never. I'll vacate the title before I fight my brother." And then Patricky in the back was like, "I'll fight him for millions of dollars." So. That's what, like, they both laughed about. She was like, yeah, I'll fight you for, like, $5 million. Like, so it was a joke, but I don't think that's ever happened. But anyway, we're going to keep moving on. True or false? Connor fights for the lightweight belt in 2020. So, and I'll add this to it because he follows it up with a question. Connor fights for the lightweight belt in 2020, but also, if Tony beats Khabib in April, Khabib will almost certainly get an immediate rematch, which likely ties up the lightweight title for the rest of 2020. How does that impact the year of Gaethje and Connor?
Hang on, someone's ringing me. I'll tell you what I think. The first part of the question is, will he fight for the title, right? I think he has a good chance of beating Cerrone.
So do I.
But I think the next step is Masvidal. Very important. Because he's talking about Masvidal, yeah. And I just don't like that fight for him. I don't know how you could give him a lightweight title fight on the back of a loss to Masvidal. Mm-hmm. He hasn't won a fight at lightweight since Eddie Alvarez.
You're right. He hasn't won a fight, period, since Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
He's lost... Well, he had a boxing match against Floyd Mayweather, and then he fought Khabib. Those are his two fights.
Exhibition boxing match.
Yep. He had an exhibition
sparring
match. Which
was ruled a draw. Also ruled a draw, because that's how you do it with exhibitions.
But, like, I was looking at, like, some of the highest, selling pay-per-views in the history of the UFC are UFC 196, Connor loses. UFC 229, Connor loses. And then, the second highest selling pay-per-view in boxing history is Connor and Floyd, and he loses. So, like, three of the biggest selling pay-per-views ever are fights Connor has lost.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. But he's, like, it shows you, like, at the end of the day, he needs a win. I think Cowboy's the perfect fight for him. Because Cowboy wins, like, yeah, you lost to the guy with all the records. And if you beat Cowboy, yeah, you beat the guy with all the records.
Do you think, like, I mean... Does it feel big over there? Because I'm kind of like, I thought there'd be just more now. I thought there'd be already more. And, you know, I just don't know why they're not doing, like, I guess I can understand it slightly, but, I mean, I just don't get, like, it's not the same when he's doing it this way. Right. When it's all quiet and all. Like, that's not what was compelling people to him. It was the fact that he was doing all the promotion. He was so visible, but he was also able to kind of have these amazing performances. And I know he's getting stretched. I know it would, you know, it must be an unbelievable amount to take on, but it's just a very different thing than it was when he was at the height of his career. Well, like, people, like, do you know what I used to walk around, man? Before Mendes and Aldo, you'd be walking around Dublin and everybody was going to the fight. Everybody. Like, you'd be, every dickhead you went to school with was going to the fight. Like, and you're meeting them all over there. And it kind of stopped around the Diaz fight where it started be just becoming Americans dressed up as Irish people.
Right.
And I kept on saying this. And I kept on saying it when he's fighting Habib. I was like, be careful. Like, the Irish aren't coming. They aren't there. This is people either on J1s that are working over there for the summer. All that around that college age, it's perfect demographic to be coming to these fights. But every time I was there, and I haven't been there in a while, I was kind of like, this is less and less Irish people every single time. It's people pretend to be Irish people, you know? So I don't know where I was going with that, but
they can't all be Irish like you and me, Petesy.
They can't. That's right, my Celtic brother.
Yeah, I told my dad that, and he could not stop laughing.
What?
Because he's like, yeah, we're from, like, I told him that Petesy gave you a pass because we're from Westmeath and no one claims Westmeath. And my dad's like, yeah, that's true. No one I've ever talked to is like, yeah, Westmeath is a place I want to go to. There's an Irish pub.
I'm going to just go to Westmeath someday.
There's an Irish pub in Rhode Island that the placemats is the map of Ireland. And it has a location for all the, what do you call it, counties or whatever you call it?
Yeah.
Of a tourist spot that you should go to in every county of Ireland. And the only one that doesn't have a location to go to is Westmeath, Ireland.
Oh, man, that's bad out. And I'm trying to think of something you can do there, and I can't.
Everyone I've talked to from Ireland, I go, oh, I'm from, like, my dad's from Meath. They're like, oh, I'm sorry. It's all like, that's my only experience with it.
No, you're not even from Meath. Meath is just beside Dublin. You're from Westmeath.
Yeah,
that's
fucking... like, way out there. But anyway... that's it for Trumbo. Great questions for Trumbo. But moving on to staying with the theme of longtime commenters, Lodovic, from all the way back from the Luke Thomas days. Happy New Year's, guys. Just for fun, could you please give us your guess for who's going to be UFC champion of each weight class by the end of 2020?
All right, let me get the rankings out then.
Also, we'll start at the bottom. Flyweight, men's flyweight, or women's strawweight. As Petesy Carroll pulls up the rankings right now.
I'm going to just be very... I'm going to just Euro the shit out of this just to annoy people. But okay. That video we put up was so funny. People were like, I can't believe he's saying these people.
So I'm going to guess... So I'll do this. I'm going to say... You're going to say Joanna is going to be champion of the strawweight division by the end of 2020.
Yeah, of course I am. Because that's what's going to fucking happen.
Going to say Tatiana Suarez will be the champion by the end of 2020.
Okay, mate. All right.
If you're gonna Euro it, I'm gonna pick the Mexican American. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
All right. So you're gonna Peach is gonna pick Joanna. Women's flyweight.
Champion remains European.
I think Valentina will stick with it. Who do you think she fights though in 2020? After she's already scheduled to fight Kalen Chukagian. There's Kalen Chukagian, and then there's JoJo. Vivian Arujao just lost Jessica Ai. She's also out there. Macy Barber's one that you obviously have to keep an eye on.
I think JoJo Calderwood is always going to be there or thereabouts. I think if she can put another couple of wins together, obviously the loss to Chukagian has really knocked her back a bit, but it was an incredibly close fight. If Chukagian's right there and Joanne Calderwood has just bounced back into the win column when she beat Andrea Lee in Abu Dhabi. I feel like a couple more wins there and you're knocking on the door. I don't know. I feel like that's going to be a problem for this division because Valentina's so dominant.
Yep.
It's going to be Anderson Silva of middleweight all over again.
Women's bantamweight.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's tough for the Europeans.
Is there a European in the top 10? Yana Kunitskaya?
Yeah, I don't think that.
Lena Landsberg, is she from Europe?
Yeah, she's from Sweden. But come on, no, I'm not even gonna be a fucking idiot there. It's just it's
Amanda.
A man's, yeah, come on.
Men's flyweight.
I think Joey B, right?
I would say so. Yeah. Joseph Benavidez, I think, is just the uncrowned champion.
Figure eight is fucking class though.
Flyweight is fun. They got Formiga's still there, Pantoja, Brandon Moreno had a phenomenal fight at 235. Who did he fight then?
Kai Kara France.
That was an unbelievable fight.
He's really good, man. Like, Kara France is really, really good. And he's another one out of City Kickboxing guys.
Yeah. Esther had actually thought that was the fight of the night. But obviously, the main event between Kamara
and Pantoja.
Yeah, I just Pantoja's said. But Pantoja Figueiredo in Edmonton, oh my God. When we were back there, me and Casey were just like, oh, they're dying. We're watching someone die. Because they were just beating the soul out of each other. That was an unbelievable fight.
I'm not messing about this. I know I'm a bit of a Euro shill, but Askar Askarov could be fucking unbelievable.
He's another one.
He's deaf. He's completely deaf.
Really?
He can't communicate with his corner. He's won the national wrestling championship in Russia. That's crazy. And his submission skills are out of this world. I think I saw him hit a twister before in ACB or something. They know he's good because you can tell by the way they're matching him. I think he had a draw in his first fight. I forget who he got. It was a tough fight though, and now he's fighting Tim Elliott on the undercard of that McGregor card. So I can't wait to see that motherfucker fight live. Like, I've been dying to see him fight live.
Women's featherweight.
Is that a division?
I'm gonna say Amanda Nunes is gonna be the champion for as long as that division is alive. Men's featherweight, or no, men's bantamweight. I know you're gonna say Petr Yan.
Petr Yan, exactly. Yeah.
Men's. Shorter. I'm gonna it's hard. I'm gonna hold out because I don't know who Cejudo's gonna fight next. If it's Aldo, I think Petr Yan. I'll say Petr Yan.
Well, you're not really involving yourself in the fun of this game, then, really, are you? By saying, "Hang on a second, I don't want to pick that one because I don't know what's gonna happen." We don't know what's gonna happen in any fucking division.
I'll just pick against you because I want to, and I'll say Aljamain Sterling.
All right, fuck you, Jose.
Men's featherweight.
Zabit.
Korean Zombie.
Zabit's European.
He is. Who else is European in this featherweight? No one really in the top 15, huh? Mirsad Bektik?
Mirsad Bektik is Bosnian, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Arnold Allen on a 6-fight win streak fighting Josh Emmett?
Oh yeah, that's in Raleigh, right? That's a banger of a fight.
Pissed me off. It's pissed me off because Josh Emmett and what I was just talking about, the guy. How do I forget him already? Who was I just talking about? Josh Emmett and Arnold Allen. That should have been in London. That's a brilliant fight for London. And also a brilliant fight in London is Nathaniel Wood and John Dodson. They're two perfect fights for London. And now, granted, I understand that Dodson went to Prague to fight Petr Yan, so we need to accept that that's doing a lot, but it's just I'm seeing so many key guys that I would like to see on that London card put in different spots against really good opponents. And I'm like, why? Why are you doing that there, you know? Or these are the fights we're crying out for.
It's why is Holly Holm not headlining the New Mexico card?
Yeah.
Why is Corey Anderson and Jan Blachowicz, who don't have ties to New Mexico, fighting in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, when they could just be on the same card as John Jones and Dominic Reyes?
That'd be a great idea, yeah. And then, that actually adds to that main event way more, having them there.
I was reading I can't remember the publication, but the newspaper of Albuquerque, their headline in the sports section, the day after they announced Corey Anderson and Jan Blachowicz, is Holly Holm not headlining. Her not headlining was the headline.
Well, that's the news, yeah. I mean, that was their lead, obviously, you know. That's crazy. But it makes sense.
Men's lightweight.
Habib.
I'm going to say.
TF.
Oh, man, that's tough. Tony Ferguson. Oh, I think it's tough. Sean El Shaadi is adamant.
Sean El Shaadi is going to slap me for even saying that. Yeah,
he's been saying Tony Ferguson is the uncrowned champion for a long time.
Can't wait to read his tweets that night.
I hope I'm there. I hope we're both there.
I'll be there. Brian, we already made that agreement, mate.
Men's welterweight. This one is where it gets really hard.
Leon Edwards.
Man. It's hard not to pick Tyron Woodley.
It's hard not to pick Leon Edwards for me.
Woodley, Edwards, they have to fight. Colby Covington.
It's
got to happen.
Like, I mean, it's such a tease at this point. You're like, come on. Like, I mean, in fairness, right? Like, 2 months ago, I was talking about this on Eurobash, that it's either going to be Leon Edwards, Tyron Woodley, or Jack Hermanson and Till. And then people are like, you know, we're talking about articles saying, oh, that's what they're targeting. 2 months ago, we were talking about this, lads. Come on. Just make it happen. You know what I mean? Right. And then Leon slagging Tyron's raps, and Tyron's like, hang on a second, mate. If you're going to be slagging my raps, I won't sign the contract.
That's so stupid. You guys are fighters. Like, first of all, Tyron Woodley puts out a hip-hop album, which I haven't listened to yet. And then, so this guy is a hip-hop artist slash professional fist fighter. And not only does this guy talk junk, and then this guy that is supposedly he's going to fist fight talks junk about his rap career, battle rap him and drop a diss track, or fist fight him, or do both, or better yet, come out with a diss track and walk out to it.
Here, man, Leon is friends with some of the best rap artists in Birmingham. Like, they are fucking really good. Like, I mean, they're really under the radar. It's a real movement going on there at the moment, because obviously London's always been well known with their scene, but Birmingham over the last couple of years is really emerging, and I'm sure that Leon knows these guys because he's always interacting with them. So I feel like, yeah, you got it. There's a lot of beautiful things going on in that matchup, and including the rap dynamic. So it just needs to happen.
Look
what happened last time. Woodley needs to look at it on the flip side. When he's looking at this, I'm sure he wants more money, which he should get. I hope he does get it. But he needs to look at Masvidal launched his whole 2019 crusade from knocking out the guy in the main event of UFC London. You're going to have that same opportunity. You're probably going to be the betting favorite as well.
100%. 100%.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to gain there. Just look at what Masvidal did to Till. And look at the ships it launched. There was so many ships launched off that fight for Jorge Masvidal, you know?
Speaking of British rap, who is it? Darren Stewart and I always have a long conversation about his entrance music. Because at UFC 238 in Chicago, he walked out to Skepta, and I love Skepta. And me and our mutual friend Oscar Willis were sitting backstage, and we both looked at each other like, this cat's walking out to Skepta right now. He's already one of my favorite fighters of all time. And then he fought in Boston against Duran Wynn, and he walked out to, I didn't recognize it, but the song Darren Stewart walked out to is called Habib Time. And it's about...
Is it Dave? Dave?
The rapper? The rapper Dave. His name is Bonkus.
Oh, I don't know.
I didn't either, but he's like, his name's Bonkus. He comes out with a song called Habib Time, and he picks that song because Duran Wynn is teammates with Habib at AKA.
Yeah, and it's send location. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Well, the beginning of the song starts with, I'll fight you in Russia, Brooklyn, New York, Ireland, just send location. That's how the song starts. And the UFC cut that out of the song on the entrance. And he's like, and Darren Stewart was like, they just hate British people. Like, why do they do this to us? Like, he was like very annoyed, but he was like happy that someone like heard the music.
Yeah. There's great UK rappers now. Unbelievable. Brilliant. I think that's like, I'm really into old music, so I feel like the only part that, like, I mean, I'm wrong about this, I'm sure, but I feel like the only part you can see real evolution in music in a mainstream sense is probably rap music at the moment. Do you know what I mean? Because the rock music that's making it into the charts and the mainstream stuff isn't actually challenging the you know, the whole genre of music, whereas the rappers are constantly, even though I don't like some of the stuff they're doing with the auto-tuning and the mumbling and stuff like that, at least they always seem to be trying to evolve it or move it on to something else, and I don't see it in every other mainstream genre.
Well, shout out to Skepta and Stormzy, because they fucking rule. I don't like to swear on this
6ix7ine. Listen to 6ix7ine as well. They're really good. Yeah. They're a group.
Yeah, Stormzy's like 6ix7ine in real life. That dude is tall. That's like the tallest human being I've ever seen as a musician. J. Cole's like 6'4", but Stormzy's a tall cat. Speaking of great music, Kamaru Usman walked out to Burner Boy, who's a Nigerian musician. Oh my god, I got so hyped during that entrance. Like,
Did you see it was one of Stylebender's earlier fights, and Wale, the Nigerian rapper, made it. He didn't actually, it's not the song isn't about Stylebender, but he made a cool little kind of video of him rapping this song about greatness with Stylebender on it, and it was really cool. I can't remember what it was called, but it was brilliant. And I can remember at the time Stylebender was like, well, Wale's like doing this stuff for me, and I was like, in about a year's time, mate, it's going to be nothing for you. That is going to be regular.
And sticking with the theme, who will be champion of the middleweight division by the end of 2020?
Oh, Darren Till or Jack Hermanson, I'd imagine.
Captain Crystal, Jared Cannonier.
Yes. An honorary European. But listen, I love Izzy. I don't want to.
I do too. Fellow weeb. So shout out to my fellow weeb Izzy, but Captain Crystal.
But he's magic. You know, when we were in Melbourne for that fight, it was like we're witnessing the beginning of something amazing here. And I know there's been some false alarms like, this is the era of the dragon, Lyoto Machida. Meh. But I feel like I think Izzy's going to do magic things. I can't wait till he fights Darren Till. If that ever happens, that would be fantastic.
There's still a lot of fights he has. Like, I want that Darren Till fight. I know all Europe wants that Darren Till fight. He's got Romero. He's got Costa. And he could have Jared Cannonier, too. Like, all of those.
Well, I mean, Costa's out for a year, though, right? Like, I mean, he's out for the guts of a year, Costa, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, if the end of 2020, that fight could happen, maybe. The beginning of 2021.
If they give Till a big spot in London and he wins... They're going to want to make that fight. Like,
if Jared Cannonier goes out there and just crushes Robert Whittaker, like, which could happen.
He did it to fucking Jack in Copenhagen.
Yeah, like, if so, if Jared, and the thing that Jared Cannonier, I know we like to joke about Captain Krills and stuff, the thing that he actually has going for him is after Israel Adesanya beat Robert Whittaker, he's like, they asked him, like, who else do you have your eye on besides Costa? And they were like, Jared. That guy, I like that guy. He's a really cool guy. So the fact that the champion is already saying your name gives you a bump.
He actually, that's another thing that showed us how great Izzy is the fact that he really put a lot of heat on a guy nobody was really talking about. Yeah. And since then, I feel like his stock elevated because he realizes that I need killers to fight me for me to do what I want in this sport. But I was kind of as well, I was thinking about poor Jack Hermanson at home watching that press conference and going, duh. Well, like he didn't need to fight Cannonier in Copenhagen. He did that like just to show I'll fucking do anything I can. And then you get all your momentum taken away. And now the newly crowned champ who's gone viral all over the world is like, hey, do you know that guy that knocked you out? Really like him.
Well, Edmund Shabazian is on the rise too. Middleweight is fun, man. Middleweight's a lot like... Uriah Hall's doing things like Brad Tavares just got knocked. Edmund Shabazian knocked out Brad Tavares when Izzy couldn't in 5 rounds.
And that's a great style matchup.
That's a fun like, wow. fight.
Shabazian and Till is another great fight.
Oh. Middleweight is quietly becoming one of the most exciting divisions in the UFC. But who will be the light heavyweight champion end of 2020?
Jan Błachowicz.
Not the returning Alexander Gustafsson?
One of them.
What about Volkan Ozdemir, who's just coming off a win over Alexander Rakic?
He's there, and so is Rakic. Anyone really with that EU membership, I'm willing to say they're knocking on the door.
Nikita Krylov then, too?
Right there. But I feel like it's Jones, yeah. Jones is...
It's going to be John Jones. Heavyweight.
Here, it is actually a disaster for that division if Jones goes to heavyweight and stays there.
Yeah.
Well, we probably said that about Anderson Silva, and look what middleweight's become.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Heavyweight, Francis Ngannou.
I agree 100%.
And I'm saying Francis Ngannou because he's French, not from Cameroon. French.
I think Francis Ngannou will... Well, it's really, like I said before, like by the end of 2020, it might be hard considering Stipe is still hurt. So Stipe doesn't fight till late in the year. We might only have one title fight. So I think Daniel Cormier could very easily beat Stipe in the trilogy. And then all of a sudden, Daniel Cormier is the greatest heavyweight again. Because after he knocked out Stipe, everyone crowned Daniel Cormier as the greatest heavyweight of all time. And then as soon as Stipe knocks out Daniel Cormier, everyone crowned Stipe the greatest heavyweight of all time. So I do think this fight between Stipe and Cormier could determine who the greatest heavyweight in UFC history is. But then you have I think Ngannou, after he fights Jairzinho, which is not an easy task, will eventually be the champion. I don't know if it'll be in 2020, but it may be 2021. It just depends on when Stipe returns.
Biggie Boy could just go in and fucking wreck everything, couldn't he?
He could. He absolutely could.
Oh, man. He's a funny... I think he's also a
member of Team Crystal.
Oh, yeah. I was going to do... What's my... Give him one of these.
So stupid.
I'm trying to make it look less cumbersome, but it's not working.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Every time you say anything about crystals, I'm just going to... But, yeah, that's all the divisions, isn't it?
Yep, that's all the divisions. We're going to hop over to Twitter.
Oh, some lads were getting in an argument there under the ask the questions point. Oh, I think so. Because I was trying to, like, look, oh, what's the questions? And then fucking lads just, you know,
in the crying all right, at each other. From Gerardo at JCDULOS1. In the second round of Dustin v. Habib, I don't know why he gave Dustin the top billing. So I'm going to say Habib v. Dustin. Dustin had a decent flurry of punches, making Habib retreat backwards. Do you think this is a good way for Tony to beat Habib, to keep the pressure, to keep moving forward? Tony for sure has the cardio to do it. So yes, is the key to beating Habib Nurmagomedov, which has never been done, to put pressure on him?
I think the thing that I feel that Tony will do better than anyone has is going to be able to engage him while Habib is smothering him. Because he actually did it against Poirier better than I've ever seen him do it against anyone. Whereas if he wasn't punching him in the face, he was trying to choke him. Like, I mean, there was not a second that Poirier could do anything where it wasn't defending himself. Like, he had no energy to punch him because he's like, I have to get this fucker off my neck. I have to get him off my back. He's taking me down. And I think Tony's going to have a better answer for that. Like, he has real quirky movements, and he real weird approaches to scrambles. Like if you watch some of his scrambles, it makes no sense how he gets out on top sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, how the fuck did he just do that? And I think that's the only thing, like a complete anomaly in terms of grappling, is going to be able to cause him problems there. Because that's what I was cage side for that Poirier fight, and I was watching it going like, this is like watching like something on National Geographic, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's all up. Like, there's nothing I could tell Poirier, like nothing anyone can tell Poirier to do, because he's doing the right thing. He's trying to stop him from beating the shit out of him, basically, and trying to choke him and stuff. He's doing everything that he should be doing, but it's just not enough. He just can't do anything to him. Everybody knows what Habib's going to do. No one's like, I wonder what he's going to do this time. He's going to fucking just march you down and then take you down and make your life a misery until you say, I don't want to fucking do this anymore.
Well, this is why this fight is so, I can't think of another word, but awesome, is like Habib's greatest strength is his top game in his wrestling. And Tony Ferguson is one of the best fighters I've ever seen fight off his back. Like, he beat Danny Castillo completely off his back. And then Kevin Lee.
Castillo's a savage wrestler. Savage wrestler, Castillo.
And then when he fought Kevin Lee, who's no slouch at wrestling and is one of the best, he's an unbelievable fighter. People just kind of, yes, he lost to Al, and yes, he lost to RDA, but Kevin Lee is an unbelievable fighter. Who had staph infection, got Tony in full mount. And I don't think it was close to finishing the fight, and then gets choked out from the bottom. And then after the fight, Kevin Lee was like, I've never fought someone who's that skilled with his elbows off his back. Like, he would get on top and Tony was just throwing elbows and like punches from off his back, and Kevin Lee was like, they did a lot of damage to me. So this is why this fight is so good, because both of their strengths play completely into the other one's strengths.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Like, I mean, I even feel like Gardier's submission to Kevin Lee is one of the best submissions of the year, because Kevin Lee's so good on the ground. Yeah. Same as Moya and Askren. It's like the level of opponent, it shows you so much when someone's able to submit a guy like that.
From Sean Denny, from at Denny Rants.
Denny.
Sean Denny.
Denny's got good taste.
What cities do you want to see the UFC hit up in 2020? I'm assuming
Amsterdam.
Ask what?
I mean, Amsterdam.
Yeah, you would.
That's because it's beautiful canals, the home of Heineken. What else do they do there?
That'd be fun. Stick Jermaine on that car. Stick Alistair Overeem on that car. That'd be a fun time.
Get Musasi back.
I've been saying Providence, Rhode Island forever, just because that's my hometown. And the UFC's never been. I think Rhode Island is one of the few states that's never had a UFC event.
I really want to see the UFC in Paris next year. If they get it legalized, that would be amazing. I'd love to see the UFC.
Morocco, like Africa.
Yeah, because that's it. From what everyone's saying about that whole situation, that would be the best place to do it logistically, because they have experience putting on these big events in terms of an African country.
I want to see them go to Puerto Rico really bad.
Will you fly me out for that?
Yeah. Just what?
They'll have to fly me out for that. Right. Like, you know what I mean?
Can you
imagine the budget I'd need for like just sun cream? It would be fucking ridiculous. It costs more than the flight to keep me in sun cream.
I know I'd spoke with Jorge Masvidal at 239 before he fought Askren, and I asked him, like, because the UFC, I guess, wants to build a PI maybe somewhere, make possibly. And I asked him about that, and Jorge Masvidal had no idea. And he's like, are you kidding me? Like, the UFC wants to hold an event in Puerto Rico? I go, yeah. He goes, I'm there. Like, he doesn't care who he fights. He goes, I have to fight there. Because he's obviously...
Wait, Leon Edwards.
He's Cuban, and the UFC's not going to Cuba anytime soon. So if they go to Puerto Rico, they have to bring Jorge Masvidal. They have to bring Anthony Pettis. Resign Eddie Alvarez, bring him back. They got to put Puerto Rican fighters on, or like people from that part of the world. I'd like to see them do a lot more in South America outside of like where they've already been. Like, they've been to Uruguay and Argentina. Argentina, Chile. I'd like to see them do more there, a lot more maybe in Central America, more cities in Mexico. El Paso would be cool, I think, because I could go and see my family. They have one of the... I heard El Paso, Texas is the most populated city in America that doesn't have a major sports team. So if that's true, that's pretty impressive because it's a major city in Texas. It's also a border town, so you can put a lot of Mexican fighters on that card. Like, why they went to Hidalgo, Texas instead of El Paso is beyond me.
I only know that the Mars Volta come from El Paso, Texas. That's the only thing I know about El Paso, Texas.
And Eddie Guerrero is from El Paso, Texas. Your favorite professional wrestler of all time.
Oh, yeah. Love him.
Yep. R.I.P. Eddie Alvarez. But Providence, yes. Rhode Island, for sure. It's just too close. It's only like 45 minutes from Boston, so there's no way they would go. From Andy Stevenson.
Andy
Steve 123. What's the best fight or fights to watch that fans may not have seen before? Specifically for you, PT, any Irish ones come to mind?
Phil Mulpeter v. John Donnelly. Owen Roddy v. Shannon Gugarty is a real seminal moment in Irish MMA history. It's when we realized that, you know, our guys can take on elite guys who had been in the UFC. Brilliant fight, really dramatic fight. Ruddy's literally in a rear naked choke of Gugarty's for the whole first round. His face is going purple and he's just like not going out, like just barely staying there. Comes back, boxes the head off Gugarty out in rounds two and three and wins. It's a controversial decision for some people, but a really good fight. I would, like, Joseph Duffy and Conor McGregor is a huge fight if you've never watched that back in the day. Just the way it happened, McGregor's this meteoric star. Duffy's the established, the elder statesman, say, at that lightweight division. Just eats one punch, takes him immediately down, submits him. That's really cool. But there's loads of brilliant fights I'm not thinking of here. I've been put on the spot. But yeah, I'd say one of the best fights ever is Mulpeter v. Donnelly, if you want to watch that. And Mulpeter v. Richard Gorry as well is another brilliant fight.
In terms of fights that I thoroughly enjoyed that I bet a lot of people that just got into MMA over the last few years haven't watched, Kong Lee and Frank Shamrock. I loved that.
Wow.
Fight. From the strike when Kong Lee was still undefeated and broke Frank Shamrock's arm with like a spinning back kick, like he blocked it, and then you literally see Frank Shamrock just go, oh my god, and it's like then the round ends and he's like, my arm is shattered. And then the very next fight, Kung Lee fought Scott Smith and Kung Lee got knocked out, and then the next fight they rematched.
Remember that when he got knocked out the first time, people were like, oh my god.
So Kung Lee, Scott Smith won, and then Kung Lee gets knocked out, and then they immediately rematch, and then Kung Lee beats Scott Smith by TKO with a spinning back kick and then follows it up with punches. Those three fights, if Kung Lee did that in the UFC, he would be one of the biggest stars in the history of the UFC. Just those string of fights. And then his very next fight was against Wanderlei Silva. And on that, you know why that fight gets lost in the shuffle? Is because that fight happened on the same card as Hendo Shogun 1. And the same night of Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler. So I remember watching Wanderlei Kung Lee, and I was like, this fight rules. And then later that night, we see... arguably the greatest fight in the history of the UFC. That fight card also had Uriah Faber and Brian Bulls. I remember that fight card.
And it's also, and you know, at the same time, was that the one that Chandler and Alvarez is going down across the country?
Oh yeah,
Florida, Hollywood, Florida.
That card also had Ryan Bader beat Jason Brills, I think, by knockout, and Stephen Bonner fought Kyle Kingsbury, former ASU Sunbelt.
Good fights to watch. Go back and watch that that light heavyweight tournament or the middleweight tournament, whatever it was. Wanderlei, Chuck, Alistair Overeem, Shogun. That's amazing.
That so
2005.
2005. 2005. To me, it was the greatest year a single fighter had. There's two. 2005 Shogun, when he ran through that tournament, beat like a bunch of Hall of Famers, and then wins the Pride Grand Prix. And then John Jones in 2011, when he beats Bader, Shogun, Rampage, and Machida, all in one calendar year. Those are the two best. Izzy this year was ultra impressive. And Izzy,
yeah.
But I still put those two slightly above him. Even Connor's run when he knocked out Mendez and knocked out Aldo, like, I still like the.
If hey, you're forgetting Dennis Seaver there, mate.
Yes.
Okay, that was in the same calendar year. Sure. Don't be ridiculous.
But the 2005 Shogun, just go look at who he beat. That's unbelievable. Like, that's one of the greatest run of fights I've ever seen in my entire life. But John Jones 2011 is way up there too.
And great thing to watch that I used to that I've done before is watch Nick Diaz's run in Strikeforce when everybody's trying to get into the UFC and he's fighting like Daly. He's fighting. Just so many good fights during that period. Brilliant to watch. I've always loved that guy. Trying to think of other fights. Go and watch BJ Penn and Joe Stevenson. Just look how good he was. Like he was, or Diego Sanchez v BJ Penn. Just imagine that this is Diego Sanchez at the very peak of his power. He was untouchable. And then watch what BJ Penn did to him that night. Like, stuff like that's always cool to watch because sometimes we forget, right? Like, with everything that's going on with BJ, you forget, like, how absolutely amazing he was.
Who was the fighter that, remember he called out Barack Obama in his post-fight press conference or post-fight interview? He was speaking with Joe Rogan. He goes, who do you want to fight? And he's like, Obama or something like that. Or it might have been Ariel. I can't remember. Oh, was it Jacob Volkman? And
he had for president. Volkman.
Yeah, so Volkman, Bobby President. Green, Jacob Volkman. That was a fun one because Volkman, similar to Owen Roddy, like he was just getting controlled the whole time. And then Bobby, and like they're so polar opposite. Like Jacob Volkman's like very much like he called out Obama. He said Obama can shove his like head up his ass and this and that. And then Bobby Green comes in with like head tattoos and like piercings right here. And then Volkman like controls him. And then Bobby Green just taps him with a rear naked choke, and then Volkman gets cut the very next, like right away. And Dana White was like, "Bobby Green will have a job in the UFC for a long time after that performance." That's a fun one.
Melvin, here's the one: Robbie Lawler v Melvin Manoff. Just watch how many leg kicks.
That's a great one.
He eats. He's getting kicked in the leg, and his leg is actually coming up and nearly hitting him in the head. His leg is red raw, and then of course the best, just to finish it the way he did, then is just unbelievable. That's a great fight. Watch that one.
That is.
And we've talked about this a good bit. Joanna v. Jessica Penne back in the day. Joanna v.
Those are just unbelievable. Those are just unbelievable performances.
Performances, yeah.
Who did Dennis Bermudez fight at 157? Is that Matt Grice? The one that got in a car?
I'm not good with remembering names.
He got in a car accident, and now he can't fight anymore. That fight, oh, man, who was that? I'm going to look it up. I was there for that. That was the first. Check. That was the Ronda card. Ronda Carmouche, and then Machida Henderson was also on that card. It was Matt Grice. I was right. That fight was unbelievable. And that was one of the times when, at backstage, when Ariel was interviewing people, that he interviewed both of them at the same time because that fight was just absolutely bananas. What else is a good one?
Was Bermudez v. Stevens on the 189 card very good and people just don't remember?
No, that was a good card. Every fight on that main card was good. That also had Almeida Matt Brown Pickett.
Matt Brown and who else?
Matt Brown was the featured prelim against Tim Means.
That was fucking wild as well.
The prelims weren't that great outside of that. Like Cody Garbrandt was on that card.
It was slow. Yeah, I remember it was like, fuck, this isn't happening.
And then Matt Brown, Tim Means was the featured prelim. And then I believe Pickett Almeida was kicked off the pay-per-view. And then Bermudez, Stevenson, and then Gunner.
Moya.
Nope. That was 194.
It was the dude he dropped with the left hook and then choked him out. John.
Nope.
Thatch.
Brandon Thatch. Yeah. That fight was Benson Henderson, Brandon Thatch. That's a good fight. Benson Henderson coming up because Brandon Thatch was a massive welterweight.
He went up to 170 and then signed with Bellator, right?
No, he went up to 170 and then fought a few more times and then signed with Bellator. That's when he was trying to because he fought Masvidal at 170 in South Korea. I believe that was his last fight in the UFC.
Mei Yamaguchi and Angela Lee is a great fight.
Unbelievable one, too. Holloway Holloway versus Leonard Garcia was good.
What's the old Lang Syne fight on one? Was it last year? Was it when he fought for the heavyweight title? Not the Brandon Vera fight. He had an epic fight.
Who's
there.
This?
Is that what's the name to do with the champion, the light heavyweight champion, the Burmese
Python?
Oh,
yes, yes. Now I can't remember. But he just won. I think he won International Fighter of the Year.
Yeah, he's fucking quality. He won light heavyweight title. The Brandon Vera fight was really good as well.
Duho Choi, Cub Swanson comes to mind.
Oh, did I not get fucking that? Hey, good list, bro, but it should have that. I'm like, yeah, I fucking watched it. Did you get me? Like, I can only pick 10, you dickheads.
Aldo Mendez, too, is one of the greatest, might be the greatest featherweight fight I've ever seen.
That hurt me the most, not including that. That hurt me the most.
Why?
That hurt me the most.
That wasn't on your list?
That wasn't on it.
Oh, no.
And it was like, everything about that fight was so exciting. McGregor's looming in the background watching it. And do you remember, like, Mendez is in the ascendancy in the first round, and then Aldo just plants him at the very end of the round, and it was arguably after the bell. And then from then on, the fight just was like fucking...
You see McGregor the whole time, because they flew him from Rio. They flew him to Rio and gave him his own embedded. And he's like going just insane. And at the end, he's like, I can't even talk trash. That fight was so good.
Do you remember, look, height of his career, very visible, commenting in front of the media, talking to people. It's like, it's a big part of his... The fascination with McGregor is his bond with the general public, and we just don't see that anymore.
GSP Conda is the one I'll end with, because everyone talks about like GSP Hendricks, GSP Bisping, like the BJ Penn fights and everything, but GSP Conda, GSP was very close to losing that fight when he got head kicked, and Conda jumped him. There's an unbelievable photo that Esther took.
Think about the press conference?
No, well, there's that one, but there's the moment that Condit, because you know, you remember that moment when Condit clipped George and he fell? There's a moment when she captures the kick, but it's not the kick landing. It's the kick is like right here, like right next to his head. And you see GSP looking out the corner of his eyes. Like he just sees it at the last second. Because if you watch that, he kind of does this like kind of quickly, but it still, so it like hits him like that. But if he doesn't get his hand up, he's dead. Like that to cap, like he's knocked unconscious. So you see him like this, and you kind of see him like, oh, and then he kind of puts his hand out like last second. That's one of the more underrated photo that Esther took.
Yeah.
I think TJ Dominic Cruz was unbelievable too.
Wild.
That was just a very skilled.
And then do you remember
matchup.
TJ was like right there, and then he just disappeared. You know, for so long he was out, like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mad.
But we're gonna end that one. But quickly, because we teased a little bit, you don't have to get too much into it because we'll do our end of the year. Fighter of the year.
Oh, really? Fighter of the year. It's either Izzy or Jorge. And the reason I'm picking Jorge is because of the cultural ramifications of his run. It was bigger in terms of it got more people that knew nothing about the sport watching MMA, engaged in MMA. And I know that you could argue the same with Stylebender, the Nigerian influence, stuff like this. But I just feel like Masvidal, because he had been around for so long and pretty much in and out, not really driving that much interest, to go from that, like a pretty much an average fighter in the UFC to one of the biggest fighters in the UFC within a year is absolutely unbelievable. And that's why I'm picking him.
I'm picking Izzy because I'm looking at it from like an athletic perspective. I think Anderson Kelvin Whitaker is a slightly better resume than Till Askren Nate.
But look at the way he did it against Askren and Till compared to, like, Izzy had not an amazing
fight
against Anderson.
He had the greatest title fight in the history of the UFC and then crushed Robert Whittaker.
Yeah, I know.
And then beat the greatest middleweight of all time.
Not a great fight.
No, but it also has my...
Well, I actually really liked it. I loved all the showmanship in that fight. People hated it. Believe me, I really enjoyed that.
That has my favorite. Like, my favorite photo of all time is in the history of sport is when he does the Rock Lee pose to the greatest middleweight ever. That's
my.
This is my fighter.
My favorite picture in the history of MMA is when me and Casey were at the breakfast buffet in Abu Dhabi.
I saw that one.
It's a big moment in the sport's history.
Yeah, I like, but that kind of transcends MMA, so I don't really, I don't really put it in the same category.
Middle Eastern croissants.
Knockout of the year. I think that's pretty easy.
Yeah, it's Masvidal on Askren.
Submission of the year.
I went for Brent Primus. Go Platinum.
Yeah, me too. That was my pick. That was number one for me.
And then Bryce Mitchell second with the twister. I'd go
twister.
And then we're into Moya on Askren because of how high level that fight is. RDA on Lee. Like, that was in my top five, genuinely, just because I knew it would be so hard.
Serkanov's Peruvian necktie was ultra impressive, too.
Oh, shit. Especially for a guy that size, man. A Peruvian necktie is really hard to land into really well and tight. So, yeah, that was really good as well.
Was it Charles Oliveira over one of the Tamer brothers? I always get Daniel and David mixed up. But he like dropped him and then sunk in the standing guillotine. But he didn't get the standing guillotine. Like, he grabbed it and then he like snapped him down. That was ultra impressive too.
Was it this year that the Suvlev stretches went?
No, that was last year.
That was last year. That was crazy. Both of those guys, Aljo and Zabit, on the same list on the same night.
That was two.
The same submission.
That was 228. That was Till Woodley.
That was fucking good.
Fight.
Not a great night for Europe. Not a great
fight of the year.
Who do I pick for this?
I think it's Izzy Kelvin.
Oh, it's obvious. It's Izzy. And like, I think that's one of the greatest fights ever. You know, I put it as number two in the fights of the decade.
Really?
And people are like, recency bias. And I was like, fuck you. Watch it again. Watch it again. Beside all those other ones, watch it again.
And you know, the number two fight of the year was on that same card.
Yeah. Holloway and fucking. So that's but there is a.
That's so yeah. I did event of the year. And that fight, 236, I believe, was my event of the year because of those two. But also had great Khalil Roundtree, like Bangkok ready, Khalil Roundtree just like stalking Eric Anders down and just beating the soul out of him was impressive. Like, there were a lot of great fights on that card. And then I think it was 239 was number two. That was Jones Santos, Nunes, Holly, Jan, Rockhold, Askren, Masvidal.
That was a great card, yeah. That was a fucking great
card.
And
then I stuck 244 number three because I don't know many sitting U.S. presidents that have ever been to a UFC event. Yeah. And so the fact that that kind of did transcend into the pop culture with The Rock being there, Donald Trump being there, that it might not have been the best main event in terms of athletic competition, but that time stopped for that event. Like that. And also, Canelo... his fight was paused until the fight was over.
That's insane. But I can remember just having a very uneasy feeling as I'm seeing The Rock coming out with that belt and just going, what the fuck is, what is this?
I know.
What the
but
fuck
people
is
loved
this?
It. And then Cage Warriors. But
I got over it. Got
Cage
over
Warriors it. Night of Champions is number four for me.
That's great. The six amazing. Title fights. Amazing event. Amazing. Like, one of the most amazing scenes in a fight you've ever seen where they have to stop it. There's so much fucking blood on the ground.
I said it turned into a violent slip and slide.
Yeah. You know, like, afterwards, when I knew, I always know it's something special when, say, like, when we're away with Casey and Esther, when two of the most experienced people in the game are like, what the fuck was that about? And that's what it was like. Everyone in UK MMA was just outside that medical room. Houston pissing blood. Dalby pissing blood. And we're all just like, what the fuck just happened there, man? What the fuck did we just watch? Mark Goddard was like to me, he goes, absolutely ridiculous. I've never seen anything like, do you know when Mark Goddard is like, what the fuck? And he was the same with Izzy and Gaslam's match. If you actually watch that, it's the most uncharacteristic thing you'll ever see Goddard do. At the end, they just like embrace each other because it's, time is up in the fight, and Goddard usually stay very close to make sure nothing pops off, but he just sees them hug each other, and it's like he's so exhausted, he's just like, oh, get me away from this. Because you remember at the end, like, he's watching that fight so closely, like, you just see, he's like, oh, fuck this.
Breakthrough fighter of the year.
Peter Yan.
It's him or Jairzinho, I think. It's one of those two.
So it's Peter Yan.
All right. I'm going to say Jairzinho because he's on Team Crystal.
That's a good point. You don't know if Piotr doesn't like Crystals. We don't know that.
Get on it. You're a journalist.
Text him now.
You're a journalist.
Do you like Crystals?
Macy Barber. Right back. Macy Barber has to be up there for me too.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
She's like, just the fact that people, like, when she fights, people either hate her or love her. I think knockout of the fighter of the year, I think Patricio Pitbull and Douglas Lima, you have to mention over in Bellator. Knockout of the year, Douglas Lima over MVP, you have to kind of put on a short list.
Oh, yeah, that was on my five. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like,
that fight was fun. There's been a lot of phenomenal. 2019 was a good year for MMA.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, it moved on from the Conor and Habib thing. And really, when that happened, I was like, we're never going to get over this in Ireland anyway. Like, I mean, they were just like, this sport is a fucking joke. Like, the way he is promoted, that's disgusting. I mean, what the hell? You're letting this guy, an Irish man, speak to a guy like that? It's absolutely disgusting. We hate this whole thing. And I'm like, well, my livelihood is taking a big knock here. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the scourge of sport in Ireland, as far as like after that event happened. And to see how it bounced back, Bellator selling out shows here, you know, new stars emerging, new gyms emerging in the country, like Team KF, Ian Gary, all those guys. I mean, it's been a great year, a way better year than I could have expected, even for me personally in the industry, than I could have expected at the beginning of the year.
I'm looking at a few of the comment section. Someone says I'm picking Volkanovski for Fighter of the Year. Not a bad pick.
I've seen a few people say that, actually.
Beats Mendez. Did he fight Mendez in 2019?
Yeah, I think so.
Or was it the end of 2018? Well, regardless, beating Aldo and
hipster shout, though, isn't it, Volkanovski? Right. Relax, lad. Stop being hipsters, fuck's sake.
Right.
It's either Jorge or Izzy. Go and fuck yourselves.
Someone says Masvidal fighter of the year, no question. Who else says knockout of the year? Bryce Mitchell, twister submission. Masvidal submission. Artem Lobov, submission, fighter of the decade.
Fair enough.
Fair play, but he kind of transcends the sport of mixed martial arts. Someone says dismantling Whitaker was nuts. Israel Adesanya, fighter of the year.
I'm not upset with anyone picking Izzy, by the way. It was a big dilemma for me. Like, and in the end, I just went for like who had the biggest cultural imprint. I completely agree with the way Jose went about it too. You know, just looking at the opponents, looking at the people he fought. It's either one or the other way, I think, to be honest.
I think an underrated event of the year was 241. A lot of people don't talk about that one. That's DC Stipe, Diaz Pettis, and Romero Costa.
Yeah, Diaz Pettis was fucking insane. And Romero.
Speaking of fight, like, Costa Romero was on my shortlist for fight of the year too.
Pissed off though because it was three rounds. Like, it was one of those where I was like annoyed. Like, I was like, for fuck's sake! Like, we knew this should have been five rounds. We fucking knew this should have been five rounds.
Should have been five rounds. Should have been five rounds.
And the fight could have definitely changed in those last two rounds. Like, I don't buy that shit with the Masvidal when people are like, oh, yeah, the whole thing was about to change. But that fight, it absolutely could have changed. I know it didn't because it didn't happen, but it absolutely could have changed.
Someone in the comment section is also going back a little bit when we were talking about where we want people to hold events. Someone says UFC Hawaii and UFC Thailand would be fun. I agree with both of those. Sign me up.
I could die in Thailand, though. Like, if I was...
You would melt.
I don't think it's a good idea.
I'll go. To send me there. Cool, then I'll go.
I was a much safer guy to send to Thailand than me. Fucking like the hangover tree or whatever.
Someone says UFC Dallas, but they want it to be a Dallas Stadium show.
I can remember. What was the fight that...
Aldo McGregor.
Yeah.
Aldo McGregor.
And I can remember us all booking, where the fuck are we going to stay in Dallas, Texas? And the hotel closes to the Cowboy Stadium was like, I don't know, like miles away. And then I was like, everyone was like, just make sure you go to Four Flags. And I was like, I don't know if that's a restaurant or whatever.
What did you say?
Everyone was like, make sure you go to like Four Flags or something, is it called?
I don't even know what that is. I'm not going to tell you the real answer. I'm going to let you live with your shame of calling it Four Flags.
Wait, what is it called? Five?
It's Six Flags. Six Flags over Texas.
I don't care. Sorry, no offense to Casey Lydon and the Lydon family from Houston, Texas. I'm a big fan of Houston. Just don't know a lot about the flags. Apologies, Casey.
What an odd character you are, Pizza Carol. But that's all the questions I'm seeing. We went a little longer, but that's because Pizzy decided that he was going to be rude to you all at the very beginning. So to make it up for you.
I don't care. So don't tell me how you feel about that because I don't care. Okay? Just remember that whenever you're going to tell me something, I don't care. And you're wasting your time.
Well, guess what, folks? We're going to be in Las Vegas together. For those of you not just listening, Pete's doing his stupid scissor thing, which is stupid and funny at the exact same time. But we're gonna be together in Las Vegas for UFC 246. We'll have a great time. We're gonna do A-Side live together. Maybe you guys can come watch. Who knows? We haven't decided yet.
Yeah, we are working on that.
But for Jose, that's Pete's. Do you have anything else you want to say? Cut a promo. We've gone a little long this time.
Don't really have one. I'll make sure I have a really good one for next week,
though. I'll say shout out to MVP Michael Venom Page coming out in his Naruto robe with his dagger, his Hidden Leaf Village headband. Fellow weeb, it's been a great year for weebs with Israel Adesanya and Michael Venom Page carrying the Torah strong.
And you even got Pete Carroll on Team Weeb now. Team, look at this.
Look at that, man. Roxanne.
What a signing.
Roxanne, can't give it. I have to give a shout out to Roxanne Modifier and Alex Caceres, who carried that torch for a long time. The MMA world, now MVP and Israel Adesanya, are carrying it farther and brighter than ever before. So, yes, us Weebs, I'm not a bad dude. MVP and Israel Adesanya are bad dudes. So, that's my promo. Happy New Year, everyone.
Make sure when Jose's article about event of the year comes out, make sure you just in the comments immediately say, "Oh, Risen 20." Make sure all of you say that, because you know and I know that Jose doesn't know about that event. Look, sure, he doesn't have a clue what happened. Make sure you say that all the way through it, because he'll love that. He'll love to see that kind of passion in his comments, I'm sure.
And someone send Pete Carroll some conditioner, because he's never used it before in his life.
That's a particularly bad day to say.
I mean, I don't want to say anything, but you're starting off 2020 in a rough shape, Pete Carroll.
I'm a bit heavy, too, to be perfectly honest.
You're a bit heavy. That's an unfortunately colored sweater. You have no conditioner in your hair. Pete Carroll is just falling apart in 2020.
These earth colors, beautiful on this skin.
What color is that? Potato sack brown?
It's potato, yeah. It blends perfectly with my skin.
Dear God. But anyway, that's Pete. I'm Jose. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll see you next week.
See you later.